Okay, so it is, we're going to go ahead and get started. So, welcome to Office Hours. I'm going to go ahead and answer questions in the order that they appear. I have linked the thread in various places. I also tagged Office Hours like 3 minutes ago, so I'm not going to tag them again. But we'll go ahead and get started. So a couple of notes from me to start with. Remind me at the end to talk about the thing, and I'll get that sorted. Let's get going. So J4 says, how am I doing? I'm incredibly tired, and I had incredibly strange dreams. It's weird when, like, in a dream you meet the physical representation of someone you've never met. I don't really remember who, but, like, a good example might be, like, Easton. Like, there is a low chance that I'll meet Easton in my life. Not that that's a problem or anything like that, it was just a thing I pulled off the top of my head. But it was like Easton was in the dream as a physical person, and it's really weird. Like, they weren't green. They were a person. It was very strange. The best way I can describe it is that I was at a furry convention that resembled the Backrooms games, right? So instead of like going, oh, I know where my room is, or I know where that party room is, or that event at the convention was, it was like, I'll just turn this random corridor and suddenly be in another convention activity. So fun dreams all around. Next up, Yosh says, what's the dog doing? The dog's doing the part of the day where they hide in their crate. I was hoping to kind of sort of like bait them out to my lap for a bit, and I'll see if that'll work. Give me a second whilst I mute and call them. I have now unmuted because Feder is now on my lap, which is fantastic. Let me see if we can do what I wanted to do. I will get back to questions in a matter of moments. Just setting up a treat and hiding potentially security. Dog cam, but also like crotch cam, but like whatever, deal with it. There's a dog on my lap, so it's technically not. Enjoy dog. Enjoy dog. Mic is weird. Thank you for letting me know. I
probably just have to wiggle this.
Is that any better? Hooray. All I had to do was wiggle it. Alright, let's get back to questions. Hi, Feder. Yeah, hello. I know, honey. I know. Don't lick my face. No. Hello. All right, where are we at? So Yosh has a technical question. I'm currently documenting value types. I see that in Freaks Engine Data Model, what is defined as a value type is managed by CodaT as engine primitive. I know CodaT's constructor is generated with T4, which makes reading the decompiled code difficult to say the least. My overarching questions is what makes a type a value type, i.e. is engine primitive to be true, or all the value types in general. Tell you what I'll do, I'll just open the code base, give you a list. Like you said, it's T4, so I should just be able to like give you a better way of looking at it if I just find it in the T4 generator. So let's go to CodaGen. By the way, if you are decompiling code, CodaT is like one of the worst files to read, so enjoy that. It is all auto-generated, though, which mitigates some of the pain that you should feel when you read it. Hi, Feder. Don't escape. Just stay here for, like, half an hour. That's all that the audience wants. That's all the audience wants. Otherwise, they're just looking at my crotch, which is kind of weird. So let's stay on my lap. All right, where were we? That's going to be a bit of a longer question, so I'll get it to you in a moment. I just realized there was a whole config system there. We have like a CodeGen config file that sort of lists all the types and stuff like that. So I'll get that in just a moment. Caden says, potatoes are a good test phrase. I use it as a test phrase a lot. As do I of cheese. Lex says, what do you think of the new official Resonite t-shirts for sale? I think that they're great. I actually have one. I got one in May. It was like a first rerun to sort of build some interest, build some insight. I have an issue, though, which is like I just destroy t-shirts. Like I wash them poorly, as in I don't look at the washing instructions at all. It is a trial by fire going through my washing machine because I just don't care. Like if you don't survive the wash, I shouldn't have bought you. And then I don't know. I just destroy shirts. They wear really quickly on me for some reason. So what I intend to do with my copy of the shirt is get what's called a t-shirt frame. You commonly do this with like sports jerseys and things. But I'm going to do it with a couple of t-shirts I've got that I really have no way to display. So they're kind of just like under my bed, and I don't feel good about that. So I have, and I mean this literally, although it is kind of a joke though as well. limited edition Mixer merchandise everywhere. In fact, you can see some of it here. Here's my Mixer mouse pad. But, like, no one else in the world has that stuff. And I know that because I start seeing Mixer stuff at Goodwill these days. So, like, I've kept all my merch, though, and I want to, like, display it somewhere. I used to joke about, like, if I had a big house in the future, I would make, like, a museum room. And it would just be, like, the Museum of Prime. And you'd go in there and there'd be, like, all the businesses that I've worked for over the years that have given me merch just sort of, like, on the wall. And, like, little placards that are, like, hey, this is the time that, like, Prime was broke his leg at a racetrack. Or, you know, this is the time Prime, like, crawled through a moldy bird nest with some fiber cable. You know, all sorts of stuff like that. So, yeah, I like them. I know that there's some issues about the shipping costs. I know that we did @tag everyone, so it should be quite obvious. But for those that are here, you can read an announcement. We've just come up with an update to the international shipping costs that might be of interest to those international folks who are listening. Okay, on to additional questions. In an issue, I recently found the Transform Stream driver component on UserRoot is set to run before physics. I know this is probably an update ordering thing, but would you happen to know why UserRoot is set to that? No idea. I've been trying to sort of figure out a way to explain it, but like most of the work I do in the engine right now, it's like just what I call like data munging, right? You take bits of data and you shove it into the right places. Whereas the work that people like, Fruks, Syro, and to some extent, although in a different angle, Geens do, are all more mathematical based and like networking based and stuff like that. They're more sort of like the, not magic parts of Resonite, that's the wrong word, but the sort of less tangible parts of it, right? I'm the, like, let's do a HTTP request and get some information and shove it in an object and then, like, spread that object throughout the code base so it does stuff. ShadowX says, when the new locomotion animation system is done, will the business part of the behind that be revealed? It's sort of up to their decision, sort of up to us as well. Like, we need to have a conversation about it. I would imagine that there will eventually be a press release. I'm kind of disappointed that it's become a sort of, like, additional point of contention with the community. As Fruk said in a thread, I can go find it if you need it. They are paying for this, and trust me when I say this, like, the people behind this are in love with Resonite as much as every one of you guys are, and they want to see Resonite succeed as much as we want to, and that's one of the reasons why they're working with us, is to sort of facilitate helping Resonite whilst also helping their business goals. So do keep that in mind whenever you're commenting. Like, there's so much going on that isn't part of the main Resonite product these days, and that's just because we're a business, we need money. Everyone's like, why didn't you hire more people? Well, we need money for that, so we're finding alternate ways to make money, merch being another reason for that. I don't remember the markup on merch, but like, it must be viable because we're doing it. I trust Bob for that. He did tell me it the other day, but I've forgotten it. All right, you want to go? All right, okay. So that'll be the end of dog cam and the end of webcam as well, because otherwise you're just staring at my crotch. You don't want to do that. So there we go. Let's scroll through the questions. That is now barky at the front door. Moving forwards. What build configuration of steamworks.net does the game use? I was actually looking at that earlier. If you give me just a second, it appears that, yeah, I don't know, like, right-click the DLL or something, man. It would take me like 5 minutes to find that out right now. Kaden says, speaking of which, do you have plans to add comments to Protoflux? We want to add, like, across-the-board additional tooling to Protoflux. So I guess a good model for your head to think about it is, like, we've built Protoflux. It's not finished. Like, there's many areas technically that we need to do. There's also many areas that we need to do visually. We want to give the nodes a refresh. But then there are areas sort of in, like, tooling and stuff like that that we need to do. We kind of need to do a lot more work in making Resonite feel like an IDE, right? So we need things like debugging, comments. Functions is another thing. Like, we just need a lot of, like, the sort of constructs that you might find in an IDE that sort of sit on top of that language and make your life easier. I know comments aren't included in that, but I'm kind of throwing them into that because of the unique circumstances here. Like, comments would probably be like another object floating in the world rather than an inline piece of a text file, which they are in regular programming. Jay says, what I hated about writing Haskell is that sometimes the documentation is just some paper instead of proper documentation. I would have accepted the paper, right? Provided I have somewhere to go. people might have noticed it. If you haven't, you will notice it now. When I solve a really weird problem, I make sure that I go back and I like connect all the dots together. So like if I post a Stack Overflow question at the same time as posting on a forum and I get the answer on a forum, I make sure to go back to Stack Overflow and put the information in and a cross link back to the forum and all sorts of stuff like that. And that's because like collectively somewhere in, you know, Earth, I have helped someone in the future. Because you know how it is, right? You type in a Stack Overflow question on Google. It was asked 4 years ago and no one responded. That doesn't happen with questions I'm involved in. If I find the answer, I let you know. So anywhere to go is like sometimes better than proper documentation. We have that with, so Ravi and Sari worked on the color nodes, so a few color node features like wavelength, and there's also a refactor of black body temperature due to the color profile that we're using. In both cases, both people there put a comment above the mathematics which linked to where those mathematics are from, and I'm like, beautiful, because then I can actually code review the mathematics. Otherwise, it's just like you're multiplying a random number by a random number. Like there's no real other way to look at it. Calamity Line says, would I get in trouble for making a system automatically kicks people with mentor, moderator, or staff badges from my worlds automatically unjoin? No. Reminder that like the user guidelines are there, as is the terms of service. There are a couple of edge cases where we might want to like have a conversation about it, but for the most part, if it's not listed on those, you can do it. That one is fine. Like it's your world, you can control who's in it. Relegate says, is the current settings menu in Resonite final or still subject to change? Always subject to change. There's a couple of things in flight for it. Like search is one thing, because I know that like as we get more and more settings, it's become more and more difficult to find the one that you want. So search is something. Some sort of like generic preset based system is there. You might see a post on that in devlog. That work got cancelled from me. It didn't make a cut, so that isn't coming anytime soon. But as a reminder, devlog has a this is work in progress. Don't like, you know, like don't make any like racing bets on anything that you find in devlog. It's all work in progress. But yeah, sort of preset stuff is needed for graphical presets, but also sort of like low motion mode as well. And what I mean by that is you turn on one setting and then because you've changed that setting, a bunch of other settings change as well. So I want it that when you turn on low motion mode, we do things like turning off the sprint field of view effect, disabling or otherwise making slower the dash open close effect. You can make that instant and then it basically pops in, which I think is better for some people, etc. But the point is like that setting would have to be changed when you turned on low motion mode. So that's coming up. Search, like I said, is another one. And then I think if we add one more category, so the category is on the left, if we add one more category, the category list will start to scroll. So at some point there'll probably be reshuffling where we maybe sort of look at collating, splitting, changing up the categories, and we'd probably do that after we get setting search so we don't sort of randomize anyone on what's going on there. But we also need a bunch more settings primitives. So for context, the individual UI elements in settings, like the sliders, the checkboxes, etc., they're actually now made entirely by the content team, and they're loaded in using a very complicated system that took a long time for me to understand, but is amazing. It is complicated, but it is amazing. It's called Data Feeds. Fruks is really proud of it, and now I understand it. Like, I agree. But it means that, like, say we need a different type of UI. Like, we have the enum selector where you can scroll between enums, but the one that I was thinking about needing the other day was a radio button, which is you can choose one of the following options. And again, that would sort of be in the graphics preset area, which, reminder, is cancelled. Devlog is work in progress. But like you need to like select one of the following options. That's radio button. We don't have that. And the same thing maybe with like multiple checkboxes, although for multiple checkboxes, it would probably be separate settings. It would be like, you know, setting one a checkbox, setting two a checkbox, rather than combined into one. But you sometimes do see grouped checkboxes. Moving on to Radwa's question. How are plans going alternative donations aside from Patreon, merch? Did you find a super service? Yes, Stripe. We are testing the Stripe implementation. Gaines is making great progress on that one. They are the technical lead for that particular project. I don't really want to like speak on their behalf, though. I don't know what they're ready to share, but like Stripe is what we're going with. It will come with maybe some slight pricing tweaks on that end. Like, we're not sure if maybe the price numbers might change, but we'll keep you up to date on that. What will change for certain, though, is the flexibility there. So we'll be able to do things a lot easier, like only buy more storage, only buy more groups, only buy this feature that you need. And then maybe also like different payment terms. So, for example, yearly, monthly, biannually, like whatever you want really there. We're also making that one with the sort of design that we don't want the current Patreon issues that we have, where you know, it needs to match email wise as well. We're doing it a different way. Jay says, I have plenty of karma on Stack Overflow. Yeah, I have a bunch of karma on Stack Overflow. I actually answered one question many, many years ago, and it's a really popular question. So I'm in like the top like 30% of Stack Overflow users for like no effort whatsoever. But like, you can see the graph, and like, it's not exponential, right? But it's like, it's very favorably linear. Although I don't really know what happened in 2023. I'm just going to blame COVID, but the graph leveled off there. But like, that's, that whole graph is one question. Which also reminds me of that time I got Reddit gold for talking about cheese once. So I'll have to dig up that explanation. But someone asked on a random Reddit about cheese. They asked why Velveeta stuck to a plate more than, say, like regular melted cheese. And I talked about cheese viscosity for a couple of paragraphs and got Reddit gold. That was years ago. But you didn't expect to hear cheese viscosity today, but there you go. Caden is asking for a reaction to a message that I missed, so I'm going to go to jump around to that. Caden says you could add things like variables where you point the comment at ProtoFox nodes so it could be traced. Yeah, we know, like, we've got a bunch of ideas on how to do it. We just need time to do it. And when we do it, I realize I've sort of gone scouse here for a second. Ignore random accent changes. They happen when I'm tired or inebriated. We just need time. And when we do work on that one, we'll work with the community on the designs, etc. Okay. Zenru says, on the subject of data feeds, what do the path and grouping parameters fields on data feed items? I'm just gonna like lock that one up. Oh, hey, these got doc block comments. Hell yeah. That's because it's brand new code. If it's brand new code, everyone's doing their best to sort of make it have comments and stuff like that. So path, this is the path the item is located at. It will be empty null for root items. For all others, each element of the list represents item key of the category that it's in. I understand that they didn't help much, but the other thing to understand about data feeds is they are sort of hierarchical, like folders. This isn't going to be exact. I kind of get annoyed when people like decompile the code after office hours and DM me. I'm like, you're wrong. It's like, I'm speaking in generics, like chill, right? But it's sort of like a pathing system where you might have, like, I don't know, like worlds forward slash name or something like that. And you can pick it up based on that path thing. It's almost a little bit like dynamic variables where you have, you know, forward slashes in that and you can refer to various spaces like that. I don't think you can use it. I don't know, though. And then grouping parameters is a list of groups that the item belongs to. And that can group other items together in ways that I don't quite understand right now. There'll be more information on data feeds soon. I do plan to do video tutorials, and I also plan to do wiki pages. So about that code of tea. Yeah, let me look at the code of tea. Much easier now. I don't have dog on my lap as well, so I can take a look at that. Yeah, so we have this thing called code generation config, and code generation config has got all the stuff that you need in it, basically. So you are looking for take a look, code of t question, that was is engine primitive, got it. Well, that's actually not part of the t4, interesting. Yeah, so is engine primitive is basically if we have an encoder, a decoder, a saver, and a loader for it. So what code a T does is it provides four operations. So there is encode, decode, save, and load. And so code a T is then used to sort of parcel or unparcel, so both pack up and unpack up, various data types throughout the engine. It's used in saving, loading, and all sorts of stuff like that. So the encoding for like a float 4 is a way to turn that float 4 into a string and back again. stuff like that. Sometimes into like actual binary as well. I think Coda has both a binary version and a non-binary version. But that loops over config to all supported types. But you're looking for base engine primitives. Let me take a look. Primitives. All supported types. this is a 200-line code file. I can't on-air edit that into a list for you, but I'll get that to you very shortly, I promise. Most of those lines are like glue stuff. You know, we do a bit of like string manipulation. We do a little bit of like looping, etc. So we don't have to like write as much, basically. I think that's all the questions we've got. If you've got any additional questions, do let me know. I love the wording of this question. So Seeker asks, will the myriad of button combo shortcuts that's present for screen mode and VR be exposed to user customization at some point? Yes. There's a GitHub issue for it. We want to do like the AAA game version of it, right? So you go to a AAA game and you open up like the configuration options and it's like, set the key for super secret action that only occurs once in the game. And you're like, all right, well, thank you for spoiling that for me. you know, like, you haven't even started, like, playing the game yet, but, like, the keyboard config is, like, the nuclear overpowered weapon button. You're like, all right, well, at some point, like, in the story, I'm going to get the nuclear overpowered weapon, and I need to push X to launch that. There is this game that is called Stuntman. I believe it's a series, actually. Stuntman Ignition is the one that... is the one that I remember. That one is like fully voice acted, but they had to reduce the voice action lines based on the amount of inputs. So when they don't have a voice action for like something that occurs in the game, they just play this audio cut called use action. And it's funny. Like it's funny. So for context, it's a stuntman game where you have to sort of drive around a bit like Burnout games. Where you sort of drive around, crash into things on purpose to make it look like a stunt drive. And then depending on the mission, you have an extra button on the controller that you can push that'll do things like activate a rocket engine or blow up something, you know, like something for the stunt. But because it's generic, the voice actor just goes like, use action when you need to do it. And it's funny every time. The last part of the question about it being beneficial, Fruix has responded to, so I do want to answer that one. So Fruix, for the benefit of the recording, said, there are a lot of things that would be beneficial, but there's only so many that we can work on at a time. It's often not a question of would it be beneficial, or what's the priority, but what's the priority of this over other items that need to be worked on? I'll add to that as well. Like, sometimes we get people that seem to think that we don't know how to do something because we're not working on it. Like, we know how to do everything. Like, Fruix is, like, the best programmer by none I've ever seen. You throw a problem at them, and it doesn't matter how long it'll take, they will fix it. I have a humongous amount of experience, and the rest of the team have their own expertise in various areas, such as the content team, have been doing amazing work, etc. We can do it. We're just, like, there's only so many hours in the day. So for context, I lost probably this entire week to a bunch of work that you guys probably won't see for a few months, and then that's fine. There's also this sort of like, if you imagine like each of the features that we aren't working on as a box, like sometimes we don't have answers to the question because we haven't opened the box yet, right? So like, for example, I'm sure Fruix has a lot of ideas for this, right? But just a feature off the top of my head, like, the marketplace, right? I could write that on the side of a cardboard box and I can put it in my pantry or my cupboard or my storage, right? And I know that it's there and I know that I need to do it. But until I get that box out, open it up and sort through it, some of the questions I just can't answer because I don't know. Like, we need to look at them. And then people say, well, why don't you know? And the reason is it takes time to do that research. So like, actually implementing, as in writing the code, is only part of the equation, right? We need to know what to write. So for Fruix, you'll see that in their giant notes that they draw and think about. They just, you know, they think it all out, draw all these diagrams, and then they write the code. That takes time. So that's why we don't immediately have the answers to questions sometimes, because research is part of the process. I was looking for the GitHub item for the input binding system. I know that we have one. It's just like... It's just very difficult to find it, so sometimes. Shifty's amazing at finding garb issues. So sometimes I just politely message her with like, hey, I need this issue, and she knows exactly where it is. It's beautiful. Yeah, I can't find it. Unfortunately, like, input is like a difficult thing. Maybe we'll do binding. Maybe that'll do it. Action key rebinding. Hell yeah. All right, there's a bunch of information here. I'm not sure if this is the right issue, but it will certainly link to the right issue. I'll catch up with questions now. If you happen to have time to check what builder steamworks.net is being used, can you drop that? I absolutely can. I can probably like idle that whilst I answer some other questions as well. Redwood says, is there a way for me to find out how much my code flux impacts performance? I'm pretty uneducated when it comes to computer science. I can check how many frames my drops or anything based on one code flux running. Yeah, so you want to isolate it to a world. This is very tricky, and we want to do better work here. You know when I talked about like IDE-like features for Protoflux? We want to like add stuff like that so you'd be able to like debug, profile it a little bit more. But for now, if you isolate it to a world, and when I say isolate, you want to be like the most minimal world possible, and you want to be the most minimal avatar possible. You can then sort of diagnose how your code affects performance there, both by frame drop. You can also open that debug thing. It's in the home screen of the dash. The information there isn't documented, so it's not that useful, but you can see number go up bad. So that might be a way to do it. But anything else will require that feature that we're talking about there, sort of profiling analysis, etc. But the debug tab will tell you things like how well the engine is performing, and it might give you some information about that. But that's why you require the isolation. Seeker says, spoilers for Resonite. No, it's like a different, like, because Resonite's, you know, open, etc. Like, none of the bindings would be spoilers. It's just, like, story-based games I've seen several times where just going through the settings has spoiled the entire game. Sometimes happens in accessibility settings as well. You go into accessibility settings and it's like, hide spiders is a common one you'll see. And you're like, well, okay, now I know the game has spiders. That won't be as exciting. But there we go. This is another thing we have, so I get to talk about it as well. Seeker says, I wouldn't mind just an external config text file. Yeah. Unfortunately, writing that external config text file would basically mean, I don't want to say like exact percentages, but it's like half the input system, right? So we would have to take that config file, loop over it, and look at all your bindings in it, and then bind to whatever you had in that config file. How close is that to having UI for that? I'd say, you know, it's about half, right? You got like the back end of the system, it's just the front end missing. So it doesn't really help to strip things down to a text file, because something still has to read that text file and then apply it to the engine, which is sort of, air quotes, half the work. Fricks, again from the recording, says there's problems when we do shortcuts like that. We usually immediately get reports of, this is hard to use, make a UI for it. And Fricks is right. The basic pivotal example of that one is simple avatar protection, which we almost get sort of like monthly reports and something else that is broken. Like, we added it because people said that they wanted basic protection, and now it's more used or understood in the community still as like absolute protection, which it's not designed to be. Trying to think of like another example there. Oh, yeah. Sociable would be another example, right? So we launched the sociable feature, and then we got a bunch of feedback for the sociable feature, and then more and then more, and it was like this, that, and it just kept expanding, and it meant that sociable turned into a lot larger. Look into, by the way, if you're not familiar with this sort of area, look into the cost of legacy code. There's a bunch of sort of research you can do on that topic. There's a few YouTube channels I can link around as well where people sort of talk about that. I was just watching one, actually, which I'll link for the benefit of it came to mind. Here. So this is a YouTuber who is an engineer at Netflix, and they are sort of on the same sort of path as Thor, Pirate Software, where they're trying to sort of teach the streaming community about programming and stuff like that. They're very good at doing it. I don't like how aggressive their attitude is in some things, but like, it's fine. So they talk about, they go through this blog post where someone talks about their time working on a legacy code base that had ran out of columns. And I have an exact similar case to this, right? I worked at a company where we ran out of columns as well. And it just, like, that whole blog post talks about the dangers, the difficulties, the challenges with like legacy code and like spaghetti code and stuff like that. Alexa says, speaking of how users react to newer features, is how the community could react to a feature taken into account when designing a feature. Yes. Good example of that might be sort of like a moderation feature. That one would usually take a longer time about it because we want to think about it to start with from a policy perspective. So it's like, what problem are we trying to solve? And then it's like, okay, how do we implement that in a way that isn't going to cause alarm? Because I know moderation's scary. It's just an example area that we might spend more time thinking about. But a lot of thought does go into every feature generally, but some features do have more thought about what the reaction might be. You'll see that we use pre-release there as well. Like sometimes we use pre-release because we're not really sure if we've broken anything. And that might sound like naive, but like Resonite's so big that we sometimes just need to use pre-release to just sort of be like, have a go. Like, please try and find something. But then sometimes we use it as a preview to be like, what do you think of this feature? And again, for the benefit of recording from Frick's, Frick says, yes, it does play quite a bit of role, both negative and positive. Things that can cause negative reactions, we try to approach more carefully. Like I said, moderation, it can often be perceived negatively. Particularly if it's perceived like we're taking away your rights, which we often aren't. We're like protecting your rights, but we need to wordcraft that in a right way. But also positive. We see people using compound approaches and things a lot. So some features are designed to help people build a lot more efficiently and empower them to be more excited. A really good example of like seeing how users respond to it actually is the locomotion system. So we did get a bunch of feedback about that in the pre-release channel. But then we also had June, who made that video that's on Twitter. And that's great, right? That's very useful feedback for us. Let me just grab that video for the reference. I got a perfect example from the Mixer days of a moderation feature that we knew was going to hurt the community, but we had to do anyway. Mixer made the controversial decision to require you to wait for 24 hours before you could stream to Mixer. So you could sign up for an account, but then once you signed up for an account, a 24-hour clock started, and you couldn't stream till that clock had elapsed. And for anyone who's thinking, like, what the hell? Yeah, me too, when I first heard we were working on that. But the reason behind it is that we found that people who were intending to stream or upload content or create content that would break any of our guidelines and the law would make burner accounts. So what we did was by adding that 24 hours is we added sort of like a delay, and it caused people to sort of second guess using our platform for that kind of content. A good example here, which is unfortunate to talk about, is active shooters. So active shooters would just like sign up to Mixer, go live instantly, and have a GoPro on their head whilst they shot people. We didn't want that happening, and that 24 hours stops that. It puts some friction there. Mixer no longer exists, so it doesn't matter either way. But once that was fully explained to me, I'm like, yeah, whatever you need. That's often the case with moderation as well, right? They fully explain like the problem they're trying to solve, and I'm like, whatever you need, we'll help you. Whatever you need. Let's take a look at questions. Okay, so we did Lex's question, down to Seeker's question. What kind of issue reports did you end up getting for the sociable feature? Just type sociable into our GitHub issue tracker and make sure you look at closed and open issues. You'll see them there. There's a few still open that I need to go through and make sure that we haven't resolved because it was a bit of a busy day for the ticket desk there. Euphoria says, is there any additional information available about the tube wire mesh flipping issue? That is in progress. Rave is working on it. Lex says, YouTube does that delay for streaming. I did not know that. Cool. It's really good at like preventing the issues I talk about and more. It's great. For full context on Mixer, we had people that figured out how to use like our services without an account to stream football games. And so like one day the video team were running around a lot. I'm like, hey, what's going on? Do you need any help? And they're like, yeah, we just figured out that like the last sort of like 4 or 5 professional football games that you're not meant to be able to watch without a ticket had been streamed to Mixer, and we didn't know because they didn't even have it a channel. I'm like, what? They sort of like broke open the video endpoint and like just shoved video in it and then got video back out the other side without having a Mixer account. Yeah, there you go. See? Link it edged it. It was very interesting. It was very like, the amount of problems we faced were like crazy. We had one particular user who we knew was viewbotting, but we couldn't prove it. And we had other users that we knew were viewbotting and we could prove it. This user was viewbotting and we couldn't prove it. And there was a full-time engineer for like a couple of weeks assigned to trying to prove that this user was viewbotting. Like that engineer, they had fun, right? Because it was like almost like a crusade, right? So they had fun doing it, but they didn't find out why. That's it. So I think we're actually out of questions. I did ask someone to remind me, but they didn't. So the reminder is that I want ideas for tutorials, but I don't really know like how to collate them. And one of the other things is that like I kind of don't want ideas from newer members of the community, because I usually just get like, I want tutorials on Protoflux. Like, I need more detail than that. So like, if you have any ideas for tutorials, do let me know. I want to try and get back into them. I've just been bogged down with a bunch of business work, which is clearing up now, so I should be able to get back to making some tutorials. So like, one of the things I was talking to someone about was like, I'm playing Elden Ring a lot. I could technically do a tutorial where we just recreate one of the magic spells in Elden Ring, and I think that would be really fun. But that is also like another question I wanted to ask. It's like, you know, if you want more tutorials from me, would you rather like basic concepts or actually building stuff? So a good example of that, if you look back at my old tutorials, is I've got one where I build this like mining system where you can mine ore. That's one style of tutorial where I build a concrete system. And then the other style of tutorial is, here is the axis aligner component, attach component, transform drivers, axis aligner. And we do need both of those. I'm just like, whatever you want, right? Give me some ideas and they might get the juices flowing and thinking about that. On the top of that, I was also thinking about, you know, potentially other areas for you guys to talk to us. I'm not one to talk about work-related stuff when I'm actually playing Resonite a lot. So I was like, hey, you know, if you have any ideas for stuff like that. Like, a good example I thought of was just sort of like still working on the name here, but like Prime's Doctor's Office. Right? I just do it like once a month or something. You guys come in, plop down a broken creation. I stream it to Twitch. I help you fix it, and then we move on. So you guys got any ideas, let me know. That was the other thing I wanted to mention. I am going to go ahead and leave off here. Probably not doing anything for the rest of the day. I had a very busy day yesterday. But you know where to reach me if you want to reach me, and I will speak to you guys soon.